Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes, reporting for duty on a Sunday night for your Monday delivery. It's November 21st, getting ready to come upon Thanksgiving week. First of all, I want to wish you all a happy holiday week, Thanksgiving, or if anywhere in the world you celebrate something as big as this holiday here in the USA, great times for you and your family and friends. But for us, Thanksgiving is a monster. It's a four-day weekend. Can't wait. Goes and I are going to do our Monday show. And then we'll put something together for you guys to consume on Thursday, because I realize most of the world doesn't have that. It'll just be kind of like some recent interviews that we did. So more on that later. Right now, we're going to touch on the UFC show that just took place, touch on the latest news. And maybe we'll each reveal what we're thankful for. So buckle up. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Sunday, November 21st, for your Monday, November 22nd delivery. Goes, I love me some early shows on a Saturday. I don't need them all that many in a row, but it kind of paid off because I wound up going to the Vegas Golden Knights game. Mm-hmm. But I kind of need Saturday to kind of get my appetite wet and get it going, and it cleansed my palate from Friday night. But regardless, the shows came and went, and here we are. I realized that during football, they're up against it. ESPN has a certain method of attack, and so I sat down, cracked my knuckles, opened up my betting services, was ready to have some fun. Man, what a long day, dude. All but one fight went to a decision. Like, that's the thing that stands out the most.
I was excited because I'm really digging these morning ones too, and I was fired up. I was there for the first fight. But I was having trouble, man. It was just one decision after another. And I'm going to keep it real. Not every fight was that entertaining. There are decisions where you sit there and you go, man, it was a great fight. And then there are decisions that just kind of drag on. And I feel like we had some of those. This turned into a really long night. I will say that I would never want a pay-per-view to start this early. I don't like that because I do kind of like that buildup of a big night, but these fight nights, if you can get them done early, I'm kind of okay with that.
Yeah. I'll take some. I'll take maybe one per quarter, maybe two per year. They're cool. Maybe one per quarter. That means once every 3 months. I don't need them like on successive weeks. And I feel like we had one last week when we started at 10 a.m. And that's when I was sick as a dog, and I still sound like a little congested, honestly, but I don't feel like I can infect anybody or nothing like that. But then if you recall, Abu Dhabi also started early, so that's why it just feels like we're on a run of this stuff. And that's fine. I'm not going to complain. Whatever. You just take it and roll with it, but those decisions can really drag it out. I'm going to confess it to the world here. I had to go back and watch Miesha Tate and Ketlin Vera because in the middle of the third round, Sammy the Squid is telling me, what's up? Like, I'm waiting for you. You know what I mean? Because I had told him only a couple fights left. I just couldn't believe that these two were also going to go to a decision, meaning Chiesa and Brady, and then Vieira and Tay. We had eye pokes. We had so many delays. I finally had to run out, kind of watch some stuff on my phone, watch the result, and then come back and watch the fights. And I feel like I just didn't miss too much, honestly. But whatever. Here are your winners. Luana Pinedo defeated Sam Hughes. Shaylian Nordumbieki defeated Sean Soriano. Cody Durden defeated Quileng Arori. Lupita Godinez defeated Loma Lukmonbi. Rafa Garcia defeated Nathan Levy. Pat Sabatini defeated Tucker Lutz. Adrian Yanez defeated Davy Grant. Now, see, that fight was fun. It went to distance, but it was fun. That was Hani Yaya defeated Kyung Hoo Kang. Talia Santos defeated Joanne Wood. Sean Brady defeated Michael Chiesa. Kellen Vieira defeated Misha Tate. Let's go backwards, goes, and we'll work our way up. Any thoughts on Pinedo over Hughes? Nurdenbeki over Soriano, or Durden over Aori? You can save the dirty Durden spot stuff. What happened in this post fight after, you know, you kind of summarize the X's and O's if you'd like.
Yeah. Early on, Soriano, he's a lot better than his record indicates. There was some fun scrambles in that fight. That fight was a lot of fun to watch. So I had fun there. And then did we get to Lupita yet?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that was another fun one, because seeing how many fights that she's taken, and then there were good post-fight interviews. I mean, obviously we'll get to the horrific one, but I liked people calling other people out. Adriana is another one, right? Mm-hmm. Good call-outs at the end. And her just saying, hey, it's on you, UFC. If you want me to come back and do this again in 2 weeks, I'll do it again. Like, those things kind of made up for a little bit of a slow pace, you know, in some of the fights. But it was okay. You know, like if you're sitting there and you're watching every second of every round, your head is going to explode by the end of the end of this night, the way it happened. But if you're there and, you know, you're on Twitter and you're going back and forth and stuff, It overall, it's entertaining, but fuck that pace, man. That pace was really killing me.
Yeah. All right. So I want to get your thoughts on Durden's post-fight speech, or post-fight interview, I guess. It's not really a speech, but in this interview, you know, he's obviously fired up. He just beat Aori. It was a close call. And I don't know much about Durden, to be honest with you, guys. A few of these fighters, you just see them and forget about them. He hasn't made his mark to me, you know, in terms of like, oh yeah, I remember he fought Dan Hooker, or oh yeah, Ben Rothwell. Like, he hasn't linked up with another big name. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So to me, I'm just consuming Cody Durden as, you know, the guy that just won. He just won this fight. A quick history on him. His last fight was a loss to Jimmy Flick, who has since retired. And then prior to that, a draw versus Chris Gutierrez. So you're not really going to stand out too much there, right? Anyway, he gets to, you know, he gets to the mic. He's talking to DC. And at some point he says about Aori, I want to, you know, send him back to China. And you could just tell there was an uncomfortable moment for DC, the UFC broadcast team. Even inside the Apex, there was some booing. And, of course, Twitter just blew up. Now, if you want the whole thing, he said, I had to send him back to China where he came from, is what he said. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
I thought it was a really dumb thing to say, okay? With everything going on in the world right now, and a lot of the Asian hate that's been going around, it is just the stupidest thing to say. I don't know him very well, and I didn't know much of him. I can't really point to interviews that I've heard from him or anything. But if I had to guess, I think it was a guy that said something really stupid, but I don't know that I could necessarily say, this man's racist. He just struck me as somebody who said something really dumb. And if his opponent was from Mexico or Canada, then it would have been, I would have sent him back to Mexico where he came from, or Canada where he came from. I don't know that there's a history that you can point to say, this guy has it in for Asians or Chinese people. I don't know that. It could actually be there and people just haven't uncovered it. But the way he said it just kind of leads me to believe that he just said something really stupid and he should know better. And then the part that gets me is afterwards, he was kind of given a chance to dig himself out of a horrific hole, and he doubled down a little bit, you know? And I thought that made him even dumber. And so it wasn't until, I think, later on in the night when he put something out on Twitter with some sort of an apology. But by then, man, too much damage had been done. And so the question is here going forward, like, what do you do if you're the UFC? Because if you make an example out of this guy, then you're going to have to be consistent across the board. You know what I mean?
Right.
Sean Strickland, he says dumb stuff. You know, there's a lot of people that have been saying dumb stuff. But if you don't make an example out of somebody, these guys are just going to keep going and keep pushing the envelope. And I know we're an edgy sport, but we're not edgy in this aspect. You know, Conor McGregor should not be going after Dustin Poirier's wife. He shouldn't be saying that shit. Sean Strickland should not be telling people he wants to murder him. I think at some point the UFC has to kind of put their foot down and make an example out of somebody for this type of stuff to stop, because it really was a dumb thing for him to say.
The steps I took were, you know, I just thought, God, that's an awful thing to say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so post fight, I'm getting ready for the next fight and I'm trying to compute it in my head. Like you said, what if it was a Mexican fighter he was fighting? What if it was a Russian fighter he was fighting? Or back to Iceland you go, where you can freeze to death. Back to Russia, go drink some vodka, bitch. You know, I'm trying to consume, like, what if he spit venom at someone from another country? And because, yes, folks, like Go said, Asian hate is on the rise, and it's detestable. And it needs to be called out, especially when there's anything like that that brushes up against us personally or our career. And that's why we're doing it, because it is at an all-time high, and it's honestly saddening to me. Much love to all of our Asian brothers and sisters out there. Some of the kindest people, honestly. Not that anyone deserves it, whether you're kind or not, but honestly, that's all I can say. Like, growing up, having Vietnamese neighbors who were always so kind, with a friendly wave or some conversation to people I went to school with. I realize every population has good and bad. What I would say goes, boy, you got to dig really hard. Like, we got to go to Westminster, California, or Garden Grove, California, and go to one of those pool halls where, you know, the bad element for the Asians maybe got together and stuff would go down. Yeah, you can find it, you know, but in my life, I never had much. I never ran into people that were Asian and had anything other than kindness in their hearts. So it sucked. And I would say right away, I don't want to just, you know, it is a racist thing to say, but I don't know if it makes him racist, because I don't know much about him, like I said. So I go to Instagram. He's only following two people. One, a guy that blocked his account and only had like a handful of followers, maybe 100 or 47 or something. But you don't see what that guy's all about. You know, maybe that guy's holding a Confederate flag, or maybe he's not. I don't know. I know that he trains with look like Diego Lima and some other minority fighters. I didn't dig too much because, like I say, I'm in between fights. But the other guy he followed was his opponent. Now, I don't know if afterwards he stops following that guy and then only follows his next opponent, or what his strategy is. But I just thought that was bizarre, you know, like that he only followed two people. So I couldn't really see much about him. And then I thought, you know what? I'm going to give him a chance to see what he's got to say post-fight. I wasn't too impressed. I would say ignorant is a good word for him, for Durden. Racist, I'm not sure of yet. That was a racist comment. I don't know if that makes him a racist. And he will be judged by his actions. That's something that a lot of people have been telling me, or I've been seeing lately, and I agree with it a lot. You know, your apology does more for you than it does for me. If I'm the offended party, it's your actions moving forward that will tell me a lot about how you really feel and what's in your soul. So I've yet to see the social media stuff. I did see the post-fight stuff, but I haven't seen what else he has said. I still wouldn't judge him off that. I would judge him off the next coming few weeks, because I'm sure he'll do some post-fight interviews, and let's see what he feels and what he says then. By then, he will have talked to people wiser than him and people that might want to guide him, and hopefully will guide him. I think he's under the Kawa brothers. You know, what are they helping him craft a more professional statement? You know, who knows? But it was very, very sad to hear on a UFC broadcast. And I'm glad he received some booze. He needed to understand that that was in poor taste, and he needs to do better.
So I liked what DC did. I thought DC handled it well. Cut him off
right then and there. He said, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, he had a pause because I think he's probably listening to something being told in his ear, plus whatever he may feel like he wants to say, whether he wants to interject himself or not. And what he did was he just said, hey, everybody, the winner is Cody Durden, and he backed away, and that was that. When he gets back, him and Fitzgerald, at least I don't remember them addressing it, but remember, I'm listening to a lot of things. I'm listening to other play-by-plays and the broadcast. I don't remember hearing it. Did you? Anything in regards from the UFC as a statement?
I think something was said, like you know, I had to cut him off or something like that.
Oh, yeah, but nothing like Brendan stepping in saying, folks, something unfortunate was said by one of the athletes in the UFC here. We don't condemn, you know, nothing like that.
I don't recall. I thought they did say something, but it was really short.
Okay. Well, like I said, it's your actions that tell me a lot. And I point to this because it is such a strong, powerful statement. But if you ever watch English Premier football, and I don't want to say Germany, Spain, and the rest of Europe, because I don't really watch them, but they may be doing it too. And a credit to them if they do. I believe FIFA as an organization does it for Champions League. But every game has deck around the stadium in some form of where you may see their advertising, whether it's digital or it's those actual those little walls that align the stadium. It'll say no to racism, or let's defeat racism. And then when the game's about to start, they take a knee, and it's like about a 3 second pause with silence, and then the announcers interject themselves and say, we are all taking a knee to defeat all forms of that. Goes is so powerful, you know what I mean? And that's a promotion, or that's a league, which is what the UFC is, I guess, a sports league promotion, however you want to look at them. And so it said the stadiums are making a statement, the players are making a statement, the announcers are making a statement. You know, it takes a while. It takes a while. You know, it's going to take generations for us to eradicate the hateful and evil people. But hopefully the future generations see it and are impressed. And I hope that's something that's here to stay, honestly, for the English Premier League.
Yeah, you know what? Like, different generations of life bring different things, right? Even if you go back and watch television from when we grew up, right? The 80s, late 70s, 80s, even of the early 90s, you can find things that are pretty racist that even still today get played, you know, like they happened back then. But I felt like that next generation, which is probably the end of yours, beginning of mine, you know, like Dan Tom, we've had this conversation with him. He's a little bit younger than me. That generation, I really felt, was going to take a big step forward in, you know, it's hard to say that you're going to end racism, but I think you can curb it really well. And I felt like that generation was on its way to doing that. The end of my generation and the start of Dan's. And then just lately, man, it's kind of reared its ugly head again. And I thought that was eventually going to go away. But things like what you're talking about, the leagues taking action, you have to at least show some kind of effort that you're trying. And hopefully, man, hopefully the UFC at some point is going to say enough is enough and put their foot down. And even if it's something as small as that, putting it on the rim of the octagon or something, just show that you care. I think a lot of people look up to these fighters, the people you see on TV. And if you see them do these types of things and watch them just sail off into the sunset like nothing ever happened, you'd be surprised how many kids mimic things they see on TV. And I think if you're the UFC, you have to do something to at least show that you care.
On a 7-hour broadcast? Hell yeah. Think about it. They're there almost every week. And when they're not, they have many opportunities to do it on Fight Pass or their social media. Every month should be some sort of a strong statement, not just February, Black History Month, or, you know, October is a breast cancer awareness. Every month there should be something, or maybe multiple causes, acknowledgments of something that brings this world together, especially because this is such a worldwide sport and every single fight card has people from a bunch of different nationalities. And the UFC has an opportunity to do this with their announced team, with their graphics on television, with anything they want to do in the apex, with any sort of a symbolic gesture. I don't know if they have time to take a knee before a fight, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there could be something, even a 3-second moment of silence before the main event. I don't know. You know, it's something that their team should huddle up on and take serious. And I would be so proud of the UFC and MMA promotions following suit, and between them doing what they do, the NFL doing what they do, the NBA, Premier League, that's what can make a difference. The last thing I'll say is this. I was born in 1969, so I'm 52 years old. But picture in 1979. That would probably put me in about fifth grade, and I was learning stuff, history, political science, whatever. So I was reading about the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the world wars that we had, and then everything that was slowly creeping up to 1979, including, I guess, Korea, Vietnam, but the history of our country as well. So when I knew that just in the 60s, folks, so in other words, 10 to 15 years before me, a black person in the South would have to ride in the back of the bus, or there was different drinking stations, like, because a lot of us used to drink out of water fountains before bottled water became a big thing. So that type of stuff, or even if you go a few years before that, women only having the right to vote, that was only maybe 60, 70 years old, or black people having, you know, their opportunity for a full vote. That, dude, that stuff is fresh to me at that time. You see what I'm saying? And now, fast forwarding another 40 years that I've lived, 42 years, I can see that it's made a difference, because no one even knows about a water fountain like that, or the buses like that, or other than from reading it in your books or hearing from it. Same thing, like we joke about a typewriter, or we joke about phone, you know, the
encyclopedia.
Encyclopedia or a phone booth, you know, everybody's got a phone. We don't have any need for that, or beepers or that kind of stuff. I'm trying to relate it now to the younger crowd when they're like, a typewriter, what the hell's that? Well, that's something that was around, you know, 20, 25 years ago that you know nothing about. And so it can all change, but it takes a generation. And that's why we have to say something, you know, we have to say something, because it does make an impact. This show has thousands of listeners, not millions, but thousands. And other shows also have it. So not just our show, but other shows have to do it. And they have to do it from time to time, especially in moments like this. I'm going to wait and see goes. And maybe in a week, I want to readdress and see where Cody Durden's at. It's not just an apology on social media and we move on. I want to see some actions. And then I think, well, I'll have a better idea of where I stand on Cody Durden. But like I say, for right now, I'm thinking ignorance, not racist, but we'll see. I haven't researched him enough to see what else he's doing or what else is out there. Frankly, I want to pay more attention to the people that I guess are doing it right. All right. The next three fights. So we had Pinero, Nurdambieke, and Durden winning. Lupita Godinez, Rafa Garcia, Pat Sabatini, again, all decisions. You know, there was a mixture of some 29, 28s in the first two, and Rafa Garcia and Godinez. That looked like fights that were, you know, decided by that third round. I thought Sabatini was pretty dominant, honestly, all three rounds. And, but, you know, you care to comment on any of these three?
Just what I said about the Godinez fight. Like, I just think that girl is super, super impressive. I don't think she's title shot worthy or anything like that, you know, in that ballpark now, but she seems like she could develop into a pretty good contender here in 2022.
And she's staying busy. She's kind of like having a little bit of fun with it. And that's that. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. We get to the main card. Tight. Yeah.
That Garcia fight was tight.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Adrian Yanez versus Davy Grant, I think for me is where the juices started flowing a little bit. And the level of competition kind of started matching what I was expecting. Great fight. Yanez wins 30-27. Or sorry, 229-28, but he lost to 30-27 goes. I agreed that it could be 1-1 in the round, going into round three. I was joking with Bilal Muhammad about this. He thought Yanez was pitching a shutout. And but it was on all three judges' scorecards, they all gave round two to Davy Grant. Now, one of the judges gave round one to Davy Grant. That I completely disagreed with. And he also, well, actually, he gave all three rounds to Davy Grant. So it was a split decision. Yanez had not a mark on him, it looked like. He was taking some kicks. And I'll tell you what, Davy Grant hits hard. He hits hard with both hands. He kicks hard. He throws some nice knees. He had a very, very diverse attack. And that's what made it a little bit dangerous, except Yanez has really, really good defense. And Yanez was able to get the job done with just his hands and a little bit of kicking, but mostly his hands.
Mm-hmm. Adrian Yanez, I mean, for those of you who know his, who don't know his story, he lost his coach. We've interviewed him since then, Sal Solis, and it's affected him a lot in the sense that obviously he doesn't have his head coach with him, coaching him, but he's also had to like pick up where his coach left off as far as with the gym and running it and running the pro practices and stuff. That kid's been through a lot, but you can't really tell when you see him perform, when you see his fight IQ. I think he's got a really strong fight IQ. I really dig this kid, man. And me so too. He goes out, he has this great performance, and then he calls out Sean O'Malley. And it's one of those things where the first time you hear it, you just go, holy shit, that would be a lot of fun. Like, sign me up. Mm-hmm. I'm down. I think that makes sense on many different levels. And especially from a business standpoint, I think what makes sense about that is, you know, the UFC, they're probably not too happy with Sean O'Malley in the sense that he's turned down some fights. You know, he's got a little bit of an attitude. I think he's realized that he is popular and his worth. But I think this is one of those situations where you also recognize we have a rising star with Adrian Yanez. People love to watch him. He's a Latino fighter, and you know eventually they're going to be going back to Mexico, and that's always big. So it's one of those situations where if you put them up against each other, business-wise, whoever wins, you're probably still going to be in a good situation. If O'Malley wins, then he keeps rolling, and he's got to win over a pretty damn good fighter that helps kind of cement the quality of fights that this kid's had. And if Adrian Yanez wins, well, that really puts him on the map. So I think if I'm the UFC, this fight kind of makes sense, man. I think I would make it.
I agree. I love it. I'm glad he said it. And I think O'Malley would now benefit from a Yanez fight, whereas prior to maybe to this fight or the other one that he had against what's his face from the Boston area, now living in Florida? The Green Dr. Pepper versus Reese's. Who?
Oh, Randy Costa.
Randy Costa, that's right. They had a great fight as well. I think Yanez definitely has risen a little bit. So I think O'Malley can now benefit from fighting Yanez, even though Yanez isn't really ranked in the USA Today Sports MMA Junkie rankings. But still, I'm sure he made some sort of a move. I'd love to see it, but I can tell you this. Grant definitely looked bigger, and I think Yanez can definitely get stronger because I look at Yanez's frame, and again, slick boxing, love it. But I think he can definitely get a little bit stronger because I think there's going to be a few bantamweights out there that might be too much, especially the ones that don't just want to stand there. There's going to be a few that are going to want to take him down, and it might make it tougher for him, you know, when they mix in everything. But I think Davy Grant already was giving him a tough time because he was mixing up his striking. He wasn't just offering hands. When he was offering hands, Yanez was counterboxing. And, you know, a few things, man, I want to say a few things here. I think the commentators compared him to a younger Jorge Masvidal, and it was a good comparison. I'll tell you why. Because Yanez, in a way, is playing with fire. And Masvidal will tell you this. I'm not talking shit. Masvidal will tell you that he felt like his hands were so good that he could kind of play the counter game and expose and look for openings. But what he didn't realize was it was sometimes costing him those split decisions. Remember how he had a bunch of those in key fights? And that's mm-hmm. why he didn't grow. And then when he all of a sudden realized, you know what, I got 4-ounce gloves and I got skills, I got to go on the offensive and throw some stuff. So caution at the wind, that's when Masvidal started turning kind of the corner and becoming a beast. That's what I think Yanez needs to realize is there's going to have to be some times where he does go after his opponents a little bit, mixing up, you know, get that calf kick going, work that body, deliver some knees and elbows, you know, just the hands. I don't remember too many fighters getting it done with just the hands. You have to, you know, have other talents to go along with.
It's sort of unfortunate in a way because of all the new responsibilities that he's taken on. He's successful, so you can't doubt that. But he seems like the type of guy that would benefit from maybe going out to a different camp for a couple weeks at a time, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe even going to Thailand for a little bit and just shoring up a couple things there, going to a camp and getting a little bit more wrestling or jiu-jitsu in. But it just seems like right now he's just very tied to home. And I understand why he's in that situation. But that kid, I think, is great. And I think he's going to get even better. But you're right. The right fighter at this moment might expose a couple things. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Fernando Vargas in boxing, where mm-hmm. if you push him too far, too early at a young age, it's not going to go well. I think he should just continue on the pace that he's going because he definitely has room for improvement. And that's saying a lot because he's already good.
How about the love he got from the champ, Aljamain Sterling? You know, I think Aljamain Sterling's just taken a liking to him. I think he has an appreciation for his skills as well. So he got some love from on our show. He also got some love from by getting a hug and a handshake after the fight. Sterling was in town here in Vegas. I had tweeted DC, but I didn't tag him like an idiot. But I remember writing, DC, after this fight, you're going to add Yanez to your top MMA with boxer skills list that he had kind of put together during the week that had become a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad Yanez kind of backed me up a little bit, man. I'm telling you, he had some nice slips, some nice counters, some nice combos, some good footwork. Goes, didn't he look so poised in the pocket? I think even DC brought it up to him. How are you so calm? You know, like this other guy's trying to rip your head off. And then he was just bobbing and weaving, slipping, ducking, countering back. I mean, Davey Grant's face was jacked up and Yanez, he didn't have anything other than just the tears that were coming down his face from being emotional after the fight.
Yeah, I mean, it was Aljamain, right? That was on our show, and mm-hmm. I think he was the one that said he kind of reminds him of Masvidal. Those are great compliments, and you're right. Like he did look good. Davey Grant, like I feel bad for him because he lost that fight, but he did a lot of cool stuff. He did some good things. I think where he just started to go wrong was in the beginning. He was kind of fighting him at a distance, which I think was good. But he got away from it, and he got stuck fighting Adrian's fight.
He should have kept kicking the inside of Adrian's leg. I think he was causing some damage. He was causing Adrian to switch stances. But see, that doesn't bother Yanez as much as it would other fighters. But still, you're going to always favor one leg over the other. And he was doing it. He was putting it in his head. You got to worry about these kicks. And you also got to worry about these hammers, you know, because like I say, Davey Grant has some power. I like Davey Grant. I want to see more of Davey Grant. I didn't think his stock dropped one bit. And again, that's the portion of the show where I was like, okay, well, that this is what I sign up for on Saturdays. You know, this is some really, really good action between fighters that are fringe, top 15, top 20, ready to make their move within a couple wins or so. They could be, you know, top 10 or possibly becoming contenders. So I love the fight. I thought the result was correct. The judge, though, that had it 30-27, Davey Grant, come on, man.
What happened there?
Take a look at yourself. Take inventory in yourself. Figure this thing out, you know? Hani Yahya defeated Kyo-Hong Kang. Goes, I thought Yahya was done because, you know, Yahya always has that strong first round, sometimes a borderline 10-8. And then he either survives the other two or, you know, so he can get out of there with the decision or sometimes maybe a draw or whatever. But, you know, he's got that body triangle from hell, right? Well, this fight, this is why I thought his goose was cooked, because Kang, he had taken Yahya's best attempts at takedowns, and he was comfortable on the ground, and he wasn't getting tired. I thought Yahya was starting to get a little bit tired. So he actually banked the first round, and I was like, oh, man, if Yahya can't even win the first round, his goose might be cooked. And instead, Yahya got an early takedown in the second round. He held him down, goes for 4 minutes and 50 seconds. How he didn't get a 10-8 himself was incredible to me. And I'll tell you why. Because it says the latest interpretations, which is in 2017 when they updated the Unified Rules of MMA, it states, I always remember it this way, the three Ds, duration, dominance, or damage. If two or the three are present, it doesn't say you have to. It just says you may strongly consider a 10-8, right? And remember, you're supposed to more strongly consider 10-8s as of 2017. Well, he didn't have the damage. I mean, he was throwing some punches, some rabbit punches, some stuff to the body, but he controlled him for almost the whole 5 minutes. I even tweeted that he almost took him down from the minute he got off the stool. So he has him down that whole time. He didn't get one 10-8 from any of the judges, but he did have duration and he did have dominance. I just don't understand what the fuck the 10-8's there for. If they're not going to apply it to that one, what else is there?
Yeah, dude. Yaya was like an anaconda, man. Once he got a hold of him, it was just nonstop. And that's the thing is, like, at his age and just all the fights that he's had all over the world, he just, even to begin with, he didn't really have much of a stand-up game or much explosion to what he did. But when he got a hold of you, that's it. And so he's like one of those guys where I see him on a card, I don't bet. I don't bet on him, and I don't bet against him, because anything can happen with that dude. He's just tough. This in particular was a good performance, but he's not the type of fighter where you could say if he fought in 2 months, he's going to replicate that. He just hasn't really been able, you know, he'll win one, lose a couple, win one, you know, win two. Right. He's just not consistent. But he's just one of those outs where, like, when you see him on the schedule, you go, oh, man, I got to fight this dude.
The judges in that fight were Douglas Crosby, Sal D'Amato, and Brian Miner. We luckily have a good relationship with Sal D'Amato. Remind me when we have him on again, because I'm sure he'll be open to doing the show again. He hadn't done any interviews for a while, and then about 6 months ago, we had a good almost hour-long chat with him. And it was so open, and it was respectful. I know we can have him on, but I'm curious, why didn't he give a 10-8 in this round? I'm looking at MMA decisions, other media scores from other outlets, Bloody Elbow, WrestlingObserver.com, MMA Junkie. We all had Sherdog, no 10-8s. Everyone had just a 10-9 for that round. But again, it doesn't say you must. It says you may strongly consider. But ¿qué más quieren? I mean, if it was, oh, well, he needed to damage him too, then the rules would say all three must be present for you to strongly consider, right? I mean, I just don't get it. When you've had the duration, you had it for almost the whole 5 minutes in a very dominant position. He had his back and a body triangle. That means the other guy didn't do shit. And then he had the dominance. He dominated. The grappler got the fight to the ground where he wanted it. So yeah. I was tripping. Another thing goes, the guy that gave 30-27 to Davy Grant was Tony Weeks. We don't do this to call them out in the sense like, fire them, get rid of them. We just say it so that everyone knows. So if these names come up again, then sure. Their job should be reviewed as well, folks. They're all grown men and women. Everyone puts on big boy pants here. And I'm sure Tony Weeks has done I know he's done a lot of boxing, a lot of MMA. He's no stranger. He's definitely qualified. But we need to know why he scored it that way, you know, because that to me wasn't an accurate score in that fight. And then this fight, I'd like to know why the judges didn't go 10-8. At least they were consistent. You know, I also have to maybe go back and reread the rules myself, but I've kind of done it a few times for the 10-8.
I sort of felt like it was the type of score, like the way my reaction was, it was the type of score where I feel like if I was that referee that's picking up the scorecards, or if I was Bruce Buffer, I would actually maybe consider going back and go, did you just mark the wrong column? Is that what happened here? Because it even if he gave him two rounds, he'd probably still be going, what? But three?
I don't know. All right. The next fights were Talia Santos defeated Hanayaya defeated Kyohun Kang. I said that. Talia Santos defeated Joanne Wood. So that, folks, is formerly Joanne Calderwood, except she married her head coach, John Wood. So now she's Joanne Wood. And it was a submission in the first round. Santos is now 2-0, I think, against Syndicate. She beat Roxanne Modafferi as well, I think, in her previous fight. What were your thoughts on this one?
I mean, early on, like the first minute, Joanne looked okay, but then she just sort of got overwhelmed. You know, she just got bum rushed and she couldn't do anything. And there's so much that was going on in her life, you know, with her just getting married and all that. You can easily probably point to that and say, hey, maybe she took this fight lightly. Maybe she had too much going on, but I didn't really have that feeling. And I think she even said something on social media or something along those effects that it wasn't any of that. She just wasn't the better fighter that night. She got dominated.
Talia Santos goes is now 19-1. Her loss is to Maria Romelo Barella. She's now 5-1 in the UFC if you include her Dana White Contender Series fight, which it is a real fight. It's not like it's an exhibition. And she's won 4 in a row, including the two I mentioned from Syndicate and Jillian Robertson and Meatball Molly McCann. So Talia Santos, with that record, that streak, I think she's going to find herself in big fights going forward. Not to say these already haven't been big fights, because remember, Modafferi once fought for the title, and Joanne Wood's been doing this a long time.
Yeah. Is she going to make her nickname Calder?
I should have called her and asked.
Yeah.
I don't know. Might not be a bad idea. All right. If anybody would, Joanne would. How about that one? All right. Sean Brady defeated Michael Chiesa. They're 29-28. Brady basically won the first two rounds, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see how the judges scored it, because I want to be accurate here, unless I was completely all the judges had it the same. These were Eric Colon, Douglas Crosby, and Junichiro Camijo, I think is how they say it. So Chiesa came back and won round three. A few outlets had it 30-27 across the board, but most had it 29-28 Brady. But let me tell you something, goes. Chiesa, who found himself on the ground just being dominated by Brady, Brady was tired. And in the third round, Chiesa, who doesn't have the most potent striking, was actually starting to land on him because he was accurate and he does have some of that clumsy power that just big, tall guys can have. You know what I mean? Not like Mike Tyson power where if he hits anyone, they're going out. But Chiesa, it helped that the other guy was a little bit tired. His hands were down. If Chiesa just keeps popping him, I'm telling you, goes, he would have stopped him. Chiesa's mistake was that he kept getting tangled up because Brady was shooting in. And granted, maybe Chiesa hits this knee and he knocks him out, but that knee brought him into close quarters. Brady would then tie him up. Chiesa was also tired and he couldn't let loose. If Chiesa would have kept his distance and just punched, I'm telling you, that guy would have got out. Chiesa would have learned a valuable lesson while getting his hand raised. So he would have took home two checks and maybe he goes and becomes better. I don't know. But Chiesa just, I think he blew it because I think he had an opportunity to actually be, even though he was down 2-0, come back and win it in round three. I'm telling you, that guy was exhausted. And then there was even one other chance where they locked up and it looked like he wanted to do a whizzer or a judo throw or something. I was like, no, just don't grapple at all. Like literally just push him away and sock him up and you'll win, Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
You'll win, Mav.
Chiesa to me was a little surprising because that last loss really seemed like it lit a fire under him. He just seemed really pissed off. And I thought in this fight he was going to be more, how can I put it, more explosive. Just he just didn't have that fire. It didn't seem the way he was fighting. I've seen him in other fights where it just seems like he just, I don't know, like he was just lacking something. It was a very winnable fight. And I believe wasn't he the underdog in that fight? Wasn't he like plus?
No, it was about even.
Was it even?
You might be right, if depending on where you caught it, because last I saw it was even, but let me look. Let me look at fight odds.
I think when it went off,
we're a typical website, but I want to look and see what a bunch of different houses has. And you guys know I've used bestfightodds.com for a while, so I just want to see across the board. Sean Brady. That fight was...
Well, it was a very winnable fight. You know, it was a good Sean Brady that showed up, and you got to give him his props, but that was a very winnable fight for Michael Chiesa.
Brady was mostly the favorite. So yeah, Chiesa was the dog, and I'm telling you, I might be wrong, man. Maybe Brady's chin holds up, but I could just tell he was tired, and every time Chiesa just hit him, even with a straight jab, Brady was feeling the effects, and he had enough time to do it. He only needed about a minute of accurate strikes, but every time he threw those knees, it would be close quarters. Brady would maybe grab the knee, and then they'd have to separate. One time they got to the ground, he had to get back up. Oh, my God, I was getting so frustrated because, see, I hold Chiesa to a higher bar of fighter IQ. He is knowledgeable about the game. He loves the game. He studies the game. He's part of MMA media now, and he's pretty respected. That's why you keep seeing him at the desk. He does a very, very good job. He should know better. And I realize that once you're in there, it's probably one big blur, but other fighters are doing it, and that's why I have to hold these fighters accountable. And I just thought it was some low fighter IQ to throw the knees. I wouldn't have thrown the knees. I just would have punched, just sling them, and I bet you he would have won. But I got to give Sean Brady his credit. He's now 15-0 overall, like 4 or 5-0 in the UFC, and now he beat his ranked opponent. So he'll make a move in the USA Today Sports MMA Junkie rankings. I'm sure he'll make one in the UFC rankings as well. Good on him, but watch him, folks, because that 15-0, he showed me something there with this fight versus Chiesa. I don't know that I'm ready to take that, ready to bet on him in fights moving forward or just take him. I got to see his game evolve a little bit more, especially that cardio. Whereas, like, look at Khamzat Chimaev. He's only 10-0. He hasn't fought as many welterweight fights, UFC fights. He's only got 4 to Sean Brady's 5 or overall fights. But yet I've seen Chimaev destroy with less of a resume, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So sure. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. We get to the main event. Misha Tate versus Ketlen Vera. Misha, former Strikeforce bantamweight champion and UFC bantamweight champion, taking on Ketlen Vera, who's been a contender, almost the number one contender, and she always comes up a little bit short. She's been stopped a couple times, once by Irene Aldana, and once by, was it Kunitskaya who beat her? Yeah, Yana Kunitskaya. But she's 12-2 overall, 6-2 or something like that in the UFC, done well for herself. This would be a big win for her. She got it over Misha Tate, 149-46 and 248-47s. What were your thoughts on this fight?
It was a crazy, confusing fight because there were times when you're watching this thing that you could say Misha's down big time.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could say she might even be winning. Like, I mean, this might actually be tied because the rounds were so razor thin. I think it's the type of fight where when Vieira goes back and watches it, she's probably going to be pissed off in a win because early on she was doing everything right. She was keeping her at a distance. She was pumping that jab. It was bothering Misha, and Misha could not get in to do anything. She would just counter and she would blast her. But she got away from that in round two. She just stopped doing it. It was the strangest thing. And her coaches kept telling her. Her coaches were giving her great advice. Come forward. You know, put pressure on Misha. You know, do the counter striking. Like, everything that was working. And somehow she just stopped throwing hands. It was the weirdest thing. She was just too complacent. And I think she allowed Misha to get back into that fight. But if you look at her top moments in that fight, if she could just somehow maybe trim down a little bit, like get a little bit more muscle, just be a little bit more explosive.
Who?
Vieira. Oh. I think she could have something, at least for the champion, where it's a matchup where when you watch it, you're not going, we already know what's going to happen here. She seems like if she could just put some of these things together, she could be a really good fighter. But the fight IQ in this one was not very good for her, but it's a good win. You know, she dominated a former champion, and Misha just looked very frustrated in that fight. I think it's the type of fight where Misha goes back and she's going to say, man, that was winnable. There were certain moments where if I could have just flipped the script for a couple seconds here, I could have walked away with a victory, which would have put her in a great situation. I really don't know how the UFC is going to look at this situation, because, you know, they probably wanted Misha to advance and at some point maybe get another title shot. But I don't know what that does, George. Like, I don't know if Misha 2.0, if that experiment, if this loss means that's over, or if she's just looking at it as this is, you know, just a minor setback. I don't know.
Well, she didn't lose to a tomato can. She lost to someone who's 12-2 overall, 6-2 in the UFC. So the experiment will be not over, but starting to fail if she loses her next fight. Then she'll go 1-2 against her new competition. Now, the first one was Marion Renault, who was a respected member of the UFC bantamweight division for years. But I don't think she ever made it past top 10, at least not in the USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie rankings. So she was just a respected name, but not like that highly ranked name that puts you over. But she won. Remember, Renault, it was her last fight. She's also like 44 or something like that. So this one was honestly a good test for us to see where Misha 2.0 was at. She came up a little bit short. Again, she didn't get thumped. And Vieira is not a tomato can. This is how it looked. Michael Bell had it 48-47. Vieira, Sal D'Amato, 48-47 Vieira. But both of those guys had it 2-2 going into the last round. If Tate pulls out that round, we'd be talking about Tate 2.0, now 2-0 in her second run. And is Vieira, you know, ever going to bounce back from this? I don't know what the narrative would be with her, but that didn't happen. Vieira won. And Junichiro Camijo had Misha Tate basically drawing dead. He gave Vieira the first three rounds, so Tate was down 3-1 going into the fourth. She would need a 10-8 just to draw on his card. But yeah, so I think Tate's next fight will tell us a lot. If she wins it, 2-1, not all's forgotten, but some stuff are forgotten, you know, and that'll be that. And for Vieira, two things. A, learn some English. Like real conversational, charming English, not just the get-by English. A lot of them have it in them, too. They just don't want to, you know, put it out there. But a lot of them can do it. Kind of like how Chael used to write Anderson about. Come on, you know some English. Or even some of the guys that have told Fedor, come on, you know some English, but they won't do it. Mm-hmm. Put it out there. Make the most out of all of these appearances. Try, man. I'm telling you, a lot of these fighters try just a little bit to connect. And when they do, it's so meaningful. But another thing for Vieira is fight more often. I think she's only had 4 fights in the last 36 months, which is the last 3 years. So just keep fighting, you know. Stay healthy, keep fighting. Let me see if I want to be accurate about this. Yeah. She's 2-2. In her last 36 months. So after she started 10-0, she took the loss to Aldana in December of 2019. Then she came back almost a year later, beat Sajara Eubanks. And then a few months after that, she lost to Yana Kunitskaya. So again, in 3 years, she's only fought twice. She's only 2-2. And she's only decisioning. You know what I mean? So she's not leaving some sort of this impression of like, ooh, man. You know, we got to get homegirl in there against Amanda Nunes. She's not doing it, and not too many are. So, anyway, that's that. Congrats to all the fighters that won and got their hand raised. Tremendous. That is the first order of business. Win, get your hand raised, and hopefully you get some momentum from your win. Hopefully you continue a streak or start a streak. Hopefully you get a bonus. Let's see who got the bonuses. Davey Grant and Adrian Yanez, 50,000. Performance of the night. Oh, this stings. Only one. Talia Santos. She's the only one that got a finish, Ghost. So I think they were. Make that's what statement. They were saying. What can you do, right? We can't give you the sub bonus if you didn't have a sub that finished the fight. And we can't give you the. Well, there is no KO in sub bonus, but you know what I mean. I wonder if. Could Gray Maynard, when he knocked down Frankie Edgar and almost won the title, could he have gotten a performance bonus based off of that?
Probably, yeah.
Even though he lost? Or let's say he drew? Maybe, possibly. Huh? And could you break someone's arm. They continue to fight. Ref doesn't see it. But then when they reveal I fought with a broken, you know, one of the bones in my forearm, could you then say, man, we got to give that guy a submission bonus because he broke the guy's arm. He didn't tap. The ref didn't spot it.
No, I don't know about that one. But
no? Okay. No. So the finish is the key. All right. Well, the UFC has been handing out 6 bonuses, 5 bonuses. You know, I'm not going to give them a hard time that they only did 3 for this one. Of course, at the Apex, there is no attendance. There is no gate. And that was that. That was UFC Vieira versus Tate, also known as UFC on ESPN plus 56, also known as UFC Vegas 43. That was the hashtag, folks. And it's also known as UFC Fight Night 198. Confusing as hell, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Try looking it up on ESPN plus. ESPN plus, man, they got it. I'm starting to sound like an old man just complaining, but it's hard to find things on there sometimes. Sometimes there are things that they do that make it easy, and then sometimes it's just like, even finding the card the next day, it should just be right there. But you have to go searching through all these other cards to even get to it.
You want to know what dumb thing I did? Hmm. I sat down at noon, no, earlier, 10 till noon, earlier. Ready to watch fights. The betting website said 12:10. I go, okay, that's fair, because usually they'll come on and go, hello, everybody, Brendan Fitzgerald here with Daniel Cormier at the UFC Apex Center. We got a great night of fights and blah, 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 and, you know, there's the skyline of Las Vegas, or not skyline, but because it's nighttime, but it's daytime, but the fighters have gotten in, and, you know, we're ready. We're going to be 12 fights headed your way. All that shit takes time, plus then the fighters come out. They go to the prep point. You know what I mean? So that makes sense, 12:10. I'm sitting there like a fool watching, and I keep hitting refresh, 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 and nothing pops up. You know what I did? I had it on the UFC post-fight show. So whatever it was, the plus 56, the fucking hashtag 43, the fight night, whatever. I guess I just read it too quick. And I'm looking on Twitter, and people are chiming in. I'm like, what? So I go back out, log back in, put in my password, everything. And then I realized my mistake. So exactly when you were saying, yeah, it's not easy. I mean, that's the first time I've done it, but it can trip you. It needs to be placed with a little bit more zing, a little bit more pop. Like, this is live. This is what's happening. Hit this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it wasn't doing that for me. So I almost blew it there. And I missed the first fight, but I was able to hit the quick rewinds and, you know, kind of catch up, and that was that.
There should also be an option where if you never want to see Justin Gaethje and Michael Chiesa in that commercial, you just donate like $2 to whatever, $5, and I never have to see that commercial again. All right.
Well, that's what we do. When we pay for a service, you know, like when I go on Peacock and I watch Below Deck Mediterranean, I don't see commercials. Because they get my $4.99 a month. Or when I get a pay-per-view, I definitely shouldn't see commercials. That's, you know, $69.79, $64.99, whatever. But I pay these bastards every month. You know, SiriusXM back in the day, it was satellite, commercial-free, you know, blah, blah, blah. This was like 20, 30 years ago, whenever they started. Of course, I love my SXM family. We were on there for 5 years proudly. But I remember when we were running commercials then, I was like, that's right. We used to be commercial free. That was the whole thing of paying a subscription, is to avoid the commercials. Then they don't have to worry about advertising. But I guess at some point, maybe they lowered the price and then they still had to plug in commercials. Maybe things were tough. I don't know. At one point it was Sirius, and then it was another one called XM. And then eventually they one bought out the other and they became SiriusXM. So who knows what their history is. They got to pay Howard Stern, right? But
a lot.
But, you know, that's why I thought we always paid the $4.99. All right, look, I have a few more stories, but I'm going to save it, folks, because Goz and I are going to put a couple interviews together that we recently did that I want you guys to listen to, and then we'll touch on a few stories. That way we have some content for the little bonus show we're going to throw you guys' way for Thanksgiving, because we're not officially having one on Thursday. But let me just tell you these last stats, and then we'll get out of here. Vieira used all 25 minutes in the UFC Fight Night 198 headliner at the UFC Apex in Vegas to work over Tate and get the unanimous decision, putting her back in the conversation amongst the women's bantamweight contenders. These are Mike's bonds, kind of like notes, I think he calls them. Mm-hmm. post-event facts, I guess is what he's saying. Yeah. And it featured 10 decision results, tied for second most on a single card in history, behind UFC 263, which featured 11 decisions. Do you remember UFC 263, guys?
No. Not off the top of my head.
UFC 263. Oh, that one. Adesanya versus Vettori 2. Well, that was a little painful. That one had Moreno versus Figueiredo. That was a finish. Edwards versus Nate Diaz. Bilal Muhammad versus Damian Maya. That's when Paul Craig broke Jamal Hill's elbow. And then everything else was Carlos Felipe. Yeah, that was okay. That was pretty recent. I guess that one had 11 decisions. Three there, four there. That's seven. Yeah, it did have 11. It had more fights, too. The payout for compliance, basically the what used to be the Reebok money is now the Venom money. 140 G's went out. Debuting fighters were 0-1 at the event. The UFC sold VIP tickets to fans, but the promotion did not make the number public. So there is a little bit of a gate, but they're not making it public. Betting favorites went 6-4. One fight had even odds. So it was what we call a pick'em. Betting favorites fell to 25-14 with one no contest in UFC headliners this year. Total fight time for the 11 bout card was 2 hours, 44 minutes, and 49 seconds. Toss in commercials and talk time, and it was a long day. Vieira has earned 5 of 6 victories by decision. Vieira's 6 victories in the UFC's bantamweight competition are tied for third most in divisional history behind Amanda Nunes, who has 11, and Raquel Pennington, who has 8. Tate fell to 1-1 since she returned to competition after 4.5 years, actually. Sean Brady's 5-5 winning streak is tied for second longest active streak in the division behind Kamaru Usman, who's got 15 in a row. Sean Brady has earned 3 of 5 decision victories by decision. 3 of 5 by decision, sorry. Michael Chiesa has fallen to 4-2 since he moved up to welterweight back in December of 2018. Chiesa has competed at least one takedown against 15 of his 16 UFC opponents. Chiesa suffered the first decision loss of his career. And there you have it. Pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, those are cool.
Yeah, I like those. Shout out to Mike Bond. All right, folks. So listen, happy Thanksgiving week for those that celebrate. Otherwise, just have a great week. Stop Asian hate. Strong emphasis for that this week. And geez, man, we love you all for taking the time to listen to our show. And we read all the comments, so thank you for them. Probably have some shout outs as well when we do our little bonus show. All right, folks, we're going to leave it at that. Go out there and be a champion.